Welcome to the Queer Confidence Podcast, the podcast to help you become your most confident queer self. I'm your host, he, she, they, Coach Alex Ray, and I haven't always been this confident. In fact, I used to be super insecure. And through this show, I want to share with you what's worked for me, my clients, and my guests so that you can become more confident. Welcome back, my unicorns. I'm so excited for today's episode. We have a special guest today, Mark Turnipseed. He is the author of My Suicide Race, Winning Over the Trauma of Addiction, Recovery, and Coming Out. And he and I connected on Instagram several months ago, I believe. And I picked up his book just about a month ago, and it has been so relatable, especially to me for growing up in an extremely conservative household that told me, you know, if you are gay, you're going to hell. And a lot of the fear and low self-worth and low self-esteem that Mark talks about in his book is exactly what we love to talk about here on this podcast. So I'm honored to have him on today. We're going to talk about all things related to suicide and addiction. So if you have kids in the car, this might not be a great episode. You might want to filter it first before you have them listen in. I don't know who's listening to this podcast with kids anyway. This is not a kid topic podcast. But just want to give you a warning that there might be some triggers here and everything, but we are going to really just unpack these things. And Mark has agreed to just share from his heart. And if you haven't yet, you've got to pick up his book. You can find it in the show notes at the end, and we'll talk about it again later. But without further ado, welcome, Mark, to the Queer Confidence Podcast.
Coach Alex, thank you so much for having me on. A couple months ago when we first connected on Instagram, I was looking out at the, you know, gay coach, personal trainer community, trying to find different people that I looked up to and could see as not only looking up to, but building a relationship. And that's why I reached out to you. That's why I started liking your stuff. So I started following you. I was like, I like this guy, I like his energy, and I love his beautiful high heels. And, you know, I think just challenging the norm in a lot of ways is fun, but also when it has a deep rooted inner challenge with defeating your own shame, you know, makes it even more beautiful. So hearing this morning why you did start wearing heels, that was huge for me. That's actually a very big topic that I'm kind of researching and beginning to understand about myself too, because I started an OnlyFans and then I stopped my OnlyFans because I felt guilty. And I was like, if I continue then my God is not going to reward me with the hard work that I'm trying to do in these other areas. And then all of a sudden I realized, I was like, that is shame talking. That is shame and that is fear talking, because my OnlyFans is a way of me expressing myself. You know, it's a way of me connecting with the audience. It's a way of me connecting with my body. And it's a way of me finally going, you know what? My sexuality is not something to be ashamed of. It's not something to be feared. It's something to embrace. It's something to enjoy. I live this life one time. Right?
Yeah. As far as we know.
Yes. I mean, as far as we know. As far as I know, I only live this life for today also, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you. I really, also like what you said at the beginning, I really appreciate that. And I'm so glad to, that we connected through social media, and it's been a real joy seeing you, flourish on there as well. And, we're going to get into all the things. I want you to also share about your coaching practice and everything too, because you do it all. You're an author, a speaker, a model, a coach. What don't you do?
Oh, I don't do women anymore.
Keyword anymore, right? So, let's give everyone a brief, as brief as possible, just like an overview sure. quickly of the journey that you go through in your book.
Sure, sure. So, since I was about 6 years old, I had been avoiding and running away and trying to escape the person that I was. So when people ask me if I had an addiction problem, I say, not really. I had an escape problem. I wanted to get away from any feeling of me, because it was wrong. It was bad. It was dirty. It could cause me to have AIDS. You know, it would eventually cause me to go to hell. And so I just hit it so hard and so deeply that I almost performed in a way of like method acting, you know, like with Johnny Depp, Heath Ledger doing the Joker and stuff. I forced myself to be someone that I wasn't my entire life. And to the point that I began to believe that I had healed myself, right? And so I had almost like become this entire different person. I was a womanizer, you know. I did other things too that made me come off straight. So football, I would go and sit and watch like hours of football with friends, and I hated watching hours of football with friends. I remember sitting there just being like, in my head, being like, I cannot do this for another minute. And I would just have to turn my brain off and just blankly stare at the TV for hours on end. Just like, what am I doing here? Like, this is not me. But on the outside, I made it look like me. And so that's just an example of what I did. I even bought a truck. You talk about like that guy's rolling by with a big truck because he's got a little, you know, that was me. I did that. I can tell you that it's true. I did that. I got a big ass man truck, and I love driving it now because it's so different. I pop out in my little booty shorts and people are like, what?
Yes. If you all look at Mark on Instagram, I think you only own booty shorts, at least for the gym.
I have gotten rid of most of my longer shorts. I've also gotten rid of most of my like looser pants and all my flannels. I used to always wear just flannels and loose jeans and Carhartts, you know, which there's no shame in that, but it wasn't me, right? That just, I'm not the lager gay, you know. Yeah. I am the South Florida gay. Like, that's where I need to be. So that's where I am now. But, you know, the gist of my story is I lived those lives so much that they led me into drugs and alcohol, and I found drugs and alcohol to be my wonderful escape. So I continued using drugs and alcohol, and unfortunately, drugs and alcohol don't only offer an escape, they offer an ulterior identity, and one that's pretty easy to put on every day. You take a pill, right? You go shoot some coke. Like, that's just, it's a fairly easy one, fairly simple one to do, and it's a very small world that you live in. Well, so I continued on that path until it kept blowing up. 4 DUIs, you know, there was a ton of different jail encounters and legal stuff. And then I went through a marriage, and I ended up in another marriage. And in this other marriage, I really, like, I saw that I had needed to finally get completely sober, you know. Otherwise I was just going to continue to hurt people. And these women in my life, I loved them, right? But I hurt them, and I felt so bad about that. And I was like, I really don't want to do that with this woman, because she's very special. She's still very dear. I still see her as a soulmate, because she brought out the true light in my life. And when she brought out that light in my life, it scared the living crap out of me, because I finally had to face, like, I finally had to face the person that God was saying that I was the whole time. Like, Mark, you are a beautiful person. You are a worthy person. Good things can happen to you. That type of stuff, I didn't believe in, because that type of stuff I had to accept. I had to accept about myself in order to manifest, in order to live that type of way. And so, basically what happened is, when I got shined that light, I freaked out and I started relapsing. And so to combat my relapses, I started doing triathlon. Well, triathlon and fitness helped me to really get into this groove of learning how to accept. It not only like helped me flex my muscles, but it helped me flex my emotional muscles. And ultimately, now that's what I do in coaching, is I help people through fitness to build their muscles of acceptance and self-compassion, right? Mm-hmm. So I was going through this process, and I started journaling and blogging about it. And people were like, wow, this is great. Will you write it into a book? So I did. I started writing it into a book, and I'm still married, have another baby. And as I'm writing the book, book writing is very intense. And I had to dive really deep into subjects that I hadn't looked at for many, many, many years. For instance, getting molested when I was six, you know, and also like getting shamed for liking Minnie Mouse more than Mickey Mouse. You know, there were events that I talk about in that book that I hadn't really looked at. But then when I looked at them through the lens of creating this book, I began to realize where my need to escape, where my fear of intimacy, where my feelings of unworthiness, where my feelings of dirtiness and shame, where it all originated was inside of my sexuality. And I go, oh my God. And then I realized that there was one last thing that I had to accept, you know, and that was my sexuality. And in doing so, there would be some very serious consequences. But I was at this turning point where, one, I had written an entire book that was a lie. And two, I was just, I couldn't go on like that. You know, I couldn't go on in my marriage anymore. And so I decided to come out. And in doing so, I had to rewrite the entire book under a brand new lens, which was beautiful. Most of the bones were actually there. So the process of getting that book out has been wonderful. And then it's brought a lot of people into my life that I never would have dreamed of. The Advocate News magazine, LGBTQ News magazine, just reached out to me yesterday wanting to promote me as one of the top. Yeah. I'm so excited as one of the top influential 100 people in the LGBTQ community. And it's mind blowing because it's these types of things that I have been dreaming about my entire life, right? Mm. And until I finally, like every day I wake up and I go, show me things that I need to accept. Like, I don't go out there and try to make it happen. Rather, I just accept like what I need to do, accept what I need to show up for, you know? And then the thing about acceptance is a lot of times we're not able to live up to our expectations or other people's expectations. But the beautiful thing about acceptance is it gives us a wonderful playground of which we can start practicing compassion towards ourselves and towards other people. And ultimately, compassion can lead towards tighter knit communities, tighter families, and definitely a closer relationship with yourself. So I think that kind of wraps up like my whole, my book and my coaching approach. Any questions?
And that's the episode. Oh my God. I love it. So it's interesting that, I don't know that I knew that you had written the book once before and then kind of rewrote it. It's kind of fascinating that the book in itself was part of the journey.
Yes. That's what makes that book so very special to me, is it was a living, breathing book. It wasn't a book created after the fact. It was a book that was created during the fact. So it's a living and breathing, you know, piece of time. It's not a in the past type of thing. It was a very, very interesting process. It's very, very special. I don't think everybody should do that, because I think that most people should probably have a counselor. I didn't have a counselor, and I was doing a lot of the stuff that, you know, you would go through. I mean, I was trained in trauma-informed care, and I had worked as a mental health counselor. So I kind of knew some of the stuff I was going through, but the emotional baggage that I had to start lugging around until it was fully processed was very intense, and it led to challenges in relationships, challenges in work, you know. And it was not, there were times of it that were not too healthy. But since I had made that commitment, I was like, I'm not giving up. I'm a very stubborn person. And so when I knew that I was going to do it, I was going to do it at all costs, right? It was a sacrifice for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, quickly touching on that, even those of us that work professionally in the mental health arena, all of us are still humans too. There's a reason that it's ridiculously helpful to have help from another person to look at things. Because when you're processing on your own, it does tend to take longer, and it does tend to be a lot more difficult than getting help from somebody, whether that's a therapist, a counselor, a coach, whoever.
Yeah. Well, let's look at, you know, addiction. Let's look at depression. Let's look at anxiety. The number one thing I think about all of those is this inner child, this inner baby that's sitting there in this crib, and he's alone, and he doesn't want to be alone, and he's scared of being alone. And all he wants to do is be held and be hugged and have connection with another person. Mm-hmm. And that's, we're no different. We're still that baby. Like, we just have a bigger body, but we still have that need to be connected with other people. And there's so many different, and as you just get so complex as an adult, and then you want your time alone and stuff like that. And it's all understandable. But then you start to feel lonely in this world. You start to feel like the challenges that you're going through you're the only one going through them. You start to feel like nobody has it as bad as you, you know, this type of stuff. And then that leads to depression. You feel like, you know, nobody else's heart races in the grocery store, you know, and then you have generalized anxiety. You know, you feel like nobody has been molested like I was by somebody as close and as dear to me as I was. And then you start to experience PTSD with other people who are close to you until you are able to express that with another human being. See, that's the connection. The connection is the healing is the first step of the healing process. Now, luckily for me, I had always been a writer. And so I had also always been a communicator. And so since this happened, like, why not just turn it into a blog so that I'm actually connecting with people and not just writing it down and it being stuck, you know? And so I started a blog and got a lot of interaction with different people over this stuff. And then I started to realize I wasn't alone. Ultimately, Alex, that is what provided me the framework where when it was time to accept coming out or not, I didn't have any more fear attached to it because I had been connected. I had connected with a whole bunch of people out there, and I knew that other people had gone through worse or had gone through exactly what I was going through. And then I found out about, I was like, but there's probably not many gay and sober people. And then I found that there's an organization called Gay and Sober, which is like AA for gay people. And I was like, oh my gosh, no way. And there was one in Denver. And so I started going to it and I was like, oh my God, all these guys are gay and they're sober. Like, I can do this. And so, and then I watched Rocket Man and I watched Bohemian Rhapsody at this basically the same time. And I was like, you know what? Like, these men right here, because they were like, this is who I am. You guys take it or leave it. This is what I'm singing about. This is who I am. This is how I'm going to act on stage. Look at how many lives that they have affected in a positive way. Yeah. And I was like, that's my greatest desire, is just to be able to, I'm done acting. I want my person, who I am, to help people, you know? And it's been such a beautiful process, but it is a process and I'm still learning a lot of it.
Yeah. It's like, really, You said that you really have always wanted to help people. And the thing that you had to do was really just shedding all the layers that were covering that up, right? All of the shame, the guilt, that had created this entire false life for you, an entire false persona. Like you were acting. Instead, now that you're not there anymore, now that you've stripped that down, which is a process we'll get into in a moment, because of that, all the things that you had wanted to do to help other people were always at your core. Now it's just everyone gets to see you at your core because you're mm-hmm. also allowing your true, authentic self to be the one running the show instead of filtering and faking.
Yeah. I remember being in college and studying psychology to become a counselor. And I remember hearing like that you have to fully accept who you are so that you can help other people do that same thing. And mm-hmm. I remember just being like, there's no way I'm going to accept that. So I knew that I was not going to be the most effective counselor that I could be and the mm-hmm. most effective coach, because eventually I was not going to do that. I was not going to accept that. Instead, what I did is put on this huge front, this huge act, and then I would sneak away to the local glory holes, right? Mm-hmm. I would sneak away to the local sex club, the men's sex club or something. And then I would get riddled with shame and guilt afterwards.
And it's a whole snowball. Oh, it starts with shame and guilt. You put on an entire act. You go in secret to like feed the authentic yeah. you, but in a really unhealthy way. And then restart. Shame all over again.
But you know what's really fun now is to go and experience that on a level that is not filled with shame and guilt. And that is, you know, that's a spot that I am really looking into with it comes to my column, My Best Gay Self. I'm really looking into that by doing various things like the OnlyFans. I'm actually going to a nude resort today. Fun. And doing a little massage and stuff. Yeah. I'm so excited.
Love it. Yeah.
And the past photo shoot, those black and white ones, those were with me in these like crazy, beautiful poses with Steven Menendez. He is a wonderful photographer. That man is magical to work with. Mm. But that was my first time at a nude beach. And so, you know, I had never been nude in public like that. And I was just, it was very liberating, you know? Yeah. So all these experiences just have been extremely rewarding.
I love it. One of the things that you, or one of the metaphors that you used in your book was that the love librarian illustration where you were like filing away guilt. Yeah. Not love librarian. I'm reading
the
my
shame,
notes wrong.
The shame librarian of shame. Yeah.
Tell everyone about that a little bit.
I'm so happy that you liked that, because when I was writing it, I actually had some feedback that I should change that metaphor. That was a very difficult one to understand.
And I loved it. It was so good.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. You know, here's what happens with shame and guilt. Guilt is a very interesting feeling. So guilt is a feeling. And I believe that guilt is, I believe all feelings are good in and of themselves. Yeah. I believe the way that we wake, if we wake up feeling depressed, for instance, I believe that feeling in and of itself may be something worth listening to, like accept it, feel it, you know, use it in your movement. And, you know, when you're doing yoga, it's a great, like, if you're feeling depressed, if your muscles feeling depressed, then don't go quite as far, you know. Bring it back a little bit. And so that feeling of guilt is actually something that can be used so that you don't end up doing a whole bunch of evil, nasty things to other people and to yourself, right?
Great point. Great point.
Well, ultimately what happens though, after we do something that makes us feel guilty, is that we either make a change, you know, or so that we don't do that again, or we go, I can't make that change. And so what we do then is we, instead of taking that guilty feeling and shuffling it back out, our librarian inside of us, a little inner feeling librarian, takes this feeling of guilt and sticks it in a new catalog that's now stuck in your library. And it's you calling yourself shameful. It's you saying, okay, I went out and had sex and it was dirty. And then when you know that you feel gross about it and you're just like, that wasn't right. And you take that piece and then you shove it into your identity, and all of a sudden you're not guilty anymore. You're ashamed of who you are because you yourself are now dirty. It becomes a title within you, you know?
And I think you illustrated that so well in your book, the difference between the guilt is more, like you said just now, it's that feeling that can really be a helping you maybe avoid things that you aren't going to be proud of later. But the shame is really, it's a similar feeling that people confuse, but shame is around identity. Not I've done something bad, but I am something bad.
I am bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that stuff, you know, started in early childhood with like stealing this piece of candy and that, and then begin to tell myself like, you are a liar. You are a selfish person. You are this, that, and the other. And ultimately it just became a habit. And the scary thing about it though, is that what shame does, and what it does is we make it a habit, especially when we pair it with things like trauma, right? So child sexual trauma, is we pair that with being, you know, dirty, with being wrong, with being a bad person. And then as we try to process that, we notice that it's part of ourselves. And so what we do is we begin to get very internally focused. We begin to almost develop narcissism in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, you get kind of stuck in that, like, oh, I'm so dirty. Oh, I'm so bad. And then, you know, for myself, that led to a greater propensity towards my already genetic disposition for drugs and alcohol, you know, because when you're that self-involved, like when you go out into a grocery store, you think everybody's talking about you. You think everybody's looking at you. And so the only way to combat that is by escaping who you are. Right. And so I would take a whole bunch of Xanax, or I would take a whole, or I would chug a beer right before going to the grocery store, whatever I could do to kind of help take the edge off of life, you know? So that leads me to what my next book, one of my next books, I'm working on a number of them right now, but the next one's going to be a hint on how to get and defeat some elements of narcissism, because I know we all have elements of narcissism. We aren't all narcissistic. Now that would be shameful, you know, to say that you're narcissistic because you have elements of narcissism. Everybody has, you know, elements of narcissism.
Yes.
But it's a slippery slope because those elements of narcissism can lead towards hurting other people. Mm-hmm. And so how and why are we kind in a world full of narcissism, in a world of ourselves that's narcissistic? Like, how and why are we kind? How do we do that? How do we practice the compassion like here and bring it out into the world?
So is it going
to be deep topic?
It sounds like it's going to be starting with the inner compassion and then direct it outwards. Is that right?
Yeah.
But, okay. Well, everyone has to get that book then when it comes out too. But
it's gonna be a little bit of a memoir as well, because it's a lot of the same stuff that I'm going through right now and recognizing. So
That's going to be great. That's going to be really great. One of the other things that jumped out to me too, you had this line in there that you had to abstain from intimacy as if it were the plague. And I think that that really relates to what you're talking about right now with shame and the results of that in our life. And part of that snowball effect is we start avoiding not only ourselves, but also other people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that like I was saying, the healing process of trauma and the shame and stuff and the depression and the anxiety, the healing process begins with connection. First, I believe that it begins with connecting with yourself through acceptance, you know, and noticing and saying, okay, here's this feeling of guilt. Here's this feeling of shame. Then the next connection that you have to make is accepting intimacy, accepting that connection to other people. Right. Mm-hmm. And then when you start to accept that you're not alone, then came the third thing. So I talk about those three things. I talk about the fear of my identity. I talk about the fear of intimacy. And then comes the third thing, that when you see that you're not alone and you see that other people have gone through that which you have gone through and it's not holding them back and they are succeeding and they are doing well in life and they do have an authentic smile on their face, and you see that and you go, I mean, I went, no way, that's not me. I can't do that. That's not going to be me, you know? And that is ultimately the fear of accepting faith and accepting in your life that good things can also happen to you. And that was a very, very challenging one to get over. Ultimately, there's an order that they have to go in too, because when I began to lack in my faith, what I did, instead of believing the thoughts that were going on inside of my head, is I believed in the thoughts of the people of which I had bonded with intimately. Mm-hmm. Without that, I would have ended up back, you know, in my same thought category again. But I think that fear of intimacy ultimately was the defining moment when I realized that, okay, this is going to start really connecting for other people as well, because I began to notice that having someone else in your life and connecting was just the answer, you know? And ultimately that's, you know, why I even reached out to you, is just like, it's almost like that's what I do now, is I used to run away and I used to be all lonely and isolated. So what I do now is kind of the exact opposite. I force myself out of my comfort zone, out of my, you know, like, oh, I want to have some alone time. And I make myself reach out to a friend or a stranger on Instagram, social media, a lot of people knock on it, but man, it can provide a very wonderful and bright experience if we utilize it right. A lot of things can be used in a negative way, but if we utilize it right, over the past couple of years, I've met people who have changed my life through social media for the better and helped me to get from where I was to where I am now. And will continue to help me get from where I am now to where I dream to be.
I freaking love it. If we boiled that down then into, like, to give somebody those simple steps, it sounds like it would be first, what you're saying is accepting themselves, then being willing to be vulnerable with other people to allow them to also accept them as well. And then after that, going out and when you're feeling like hiding from yourself, you notice yourself slipping back again, doing the opposite. Hey, I'm going to go reach out to someone. Or I want to hear your thoughts on this. Something that's helpful for me, because I used to do the opposite. I was extremely extroverted in order to cope. That was a way of me ignoring myself, was surrounding myself with a lot of people all the time. And so what I've had to work through in the past couple of years is like, oh, it actually is okay to sit at home alone and be with myself and my thoughts. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that too.
I think that that is absolutely imperative for my health and my well-being, is being alone with my thoughts. As you can see, I don't have a TV in here right now. And that is because a TV has become lately a way of me disconnecting from those thoughts and that process. Now, I still do have a TV in my house that I'll bring out to watch, but it's not sitting right here because I noticed a problem happening. And so when I notice these little problems happening, just finding out different ways to like kick it in the bud, like right when it starts coming up, just helps, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was one of them. I wasn't getting my full rest. And so here's the thing, is I am actually a introvert at heart. You wouldn't believe that, but I am an introvert, and I force myself to do extrovert stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm always meeting people out for coffee. I'm always going, and I say hey to everybody that I pass, and everybody in the store, basically. People hate me because I'm the guy who's like, hey, 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 you know, and I force myself to do that. But I'll tell you one thing, and then I go to meetings, and I force myself to do that. But in doing so, it's very tiring. Because it doesn't come natural to me. Yeah. And so I need to recharge with myself, right? I need to recharge with some time alone. And if I come home and my TV is in my living room, I'll flip it on, and I've got an exercise mat here, and I'll be doing my, you know, exercises and my stretches and foam rolling while I'm watching TV. And I won't be connecting with myself and recharging those internal things that need to occur, right?
Yeah.
And you know what I've noticed too is that type of stuff, like when you're not recharging like that, it affects your dreams. Mm-hmm. And so
God, does it ever.
I either stop having dreams, or I have really weird ones that are like upsetting. And so I decided, I've done a couple different things around my house to set it up now to where I can maximize my sleeping and recharging potential.
I love it. That's what a it sounds like. I don't know, a little bit like people that call themselves biohackers, you know, that are always looking to maximize human potential and through different recovery, rest things. But one of the things I want to point out in what you're just talking about, the word that I use for a lot of those things that are distractions from ourself, or distractions essentially from feeling, is buffer, right? We just take our emotions and we're like, well, I'll just buffer it away for later. I'll deal with it later. And it becomes a giant pile. And if we're going to use a closet metaphor for especially for us in the queer community, right? We just pile it all in the closet, and eventually we have to open it up, and it feels overwhelming. And so it's so much that many people then resort to, okay, well, I guess I still need to keep buffering it away. And so that can be things like what you're talking about with TV and drugs, alcohol, sex, social media, like even friends distracting with lots of activity. How do you notice when you're, or like, let me rephrase that question. What's your signal when you're taking something that in and of itself is not, you know, an evil or bad thing, like watching TV, and then notice, oh, wait a minute, I'm actually doing this to avoid myself or avoid feeling?
Three things. Am I irritable? Am I restless? Or am I discontent? Okay. Any of those feelings to any of those extremes, then it's time to go, what is this doing to me? What is this doing to my spirit? How is this helping, or how is this creating that buffer? You know, where is this taking me? And ultimately, once any of those feelings comes up, then I have a choice, right? In active addiction, that's where it breaks. There's no more choice, you know, because the only choice is to use drugs. But right now, like being sober, when I feel any of those three things, I have a choice to either take action at the thing that's causing the irritability, the discontent, or the restlessness. I can take action on those things, or I cannot, and I can put them in that closet. Now, what I've noticed for myself is that I have got to be very, very serious and disciplined about that type of stuff. So little itty bitty things, like taking my fucking, and it's almost maybe OCD a little bit, but like taking my grocery cart from my cart all the way back to the grocery store, or at least to the little, you know, cage, is an example of one of those little things that makes me feel irritable after I do it. I leave the grocery store and I'm like, oh, I'm irritated with myself. Why didn't I just take it back? You know?
Oh, when you bring it to the cage versus the store? Okay.
No. I bring it to the cage or the store, but there is a lot of times in myself, and there have been times where I just leave it in the parking lot. Or I put it in the grass beside the parking lot, and I'm like, and then I drive away and I feel irritable. I'm like, oh my gosh, why did I do that? Or, you know, for instance, TV, I'll sit there and I'll be watching it and I'm just like restless. I'm just like, what am I doing? Like, I'm just wasting time. And I'll do the same thing can happen on social media, like you were saying, you know, so any of those three feelings, when they come up, there's something there, something maybe very obvious, like sitting there in front of the TV, but it's something maybe more incipient and more secret and more subtle, you know. Maybe it's a relationship that has gone a little bit stale because I haven't been putting in the effort, or maybe it's a relationship that has a little bit of bitterness in it because I haven't asked for forgiveness, or I haven't apologized for this horrible thing that I did. And maybe that's causing my irritability with other people in my life, or maybe that's causing my discontentment in other relationships because I haven't solved this one. You know, I haven't been able to move on or something. And so any of those types of feelings, if I don't nip them, then they start building. And for myself, I'm really lucky because I have to deal with those. Otherwise, they lead me back to drugs and alcohol, like 100%. Every single time in my life, they have led me back to drugs and alcohol. And I just accept that is true. And I know what happens when drugs and alcohol come back into my life is I get suicidal real fast. And so to me, when those things happen in my life, I know where they're going to lead. And basically it's like me kind of killing myself if I do them, or if I don't do them. If I just continue to build it up in the closet, then it's like me slowly killing myself. It's me getting, I feel like in life, I can either go a step closer towards drinking and drugging again, or each day I can walk further away.
Yeah. What a powerful statement. And thank you too for those were perfect illustrations. The cart, the TV, like those, because that's what I was going to ask you next, is like, give us some examples of what you see, because you're so great with that, with metaphors. I want to bring this in because we're kind of dancing around it a little bit and we're coming to the close here. So I want to bring it in to confidence. And confidence, as I define it, is really an ability to create your own calm in any circumstance. And it comes from the connection that we have with our inner self. Confidence isn't feeling great all the time. Confidence is like being okay with, oh, I'm going to experience a crappy emotion, but I'm not really scared of it because I know at the end of the day, I'm going to have my own back. I'm not going to run away from myself.
Yeah.
And what you've shared through your story and what I see through your book is the more that you accepted yourself, the more that you let other people in, the more that kind of snowballed into you having full acceptance of your authentic self, which now has created the very, you know, now on the outside, we get to see the person that's been hiding on the inside for a while. So what do you think if you were going to give advice to maybe your younger self, to stepping into your true authentic self, to where you're going to actually find confidence? I don't know. If you could give your younger self any advice on that, what would it be?
Just jump, buddy. Mm. Just jump. Daddy's here in the pool. Like, I am going to catch you. You don't need to have confidence because you are beautiful. You don't need to wait until everything seems ready because it is ready. I am here for you. Yeah. I believe that that is ultimately it. I get a lot of times, like, I think that the strongest people are those people that accept all of their weaknesses. And admit all of their weaknesses. And I believe that the most confident people are the people who just let go when they feel like they can't live up to it. For instance, every single podcast interview that I do, I go, I'm not good enough. What am I going to talk about? My story is not good enough. It's not going to help people. Every single time.
This was garbage. No one got anything.
Every single time I say, maybe I should call him and we should reschedule this because I'm just not feeling it. I'm not feeling confident today. Mm-hmm. And what I have learned through first with drugs and alcohol was just do it. Just accept, like just jump into it, you know, and just walk into that store today. Walk into that store. You don't even have to go buy something. Just walk into that store without a head full of Xanax. Give it a try. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, you're freaking out, but just give it a try. And the more and more that happens, it's not that I grow in confidence. It's that I grow in strength and I grow in my faith. And I go, it's going to be okay. All I have to do is show up. All I have to do is be myself. And that's when it really starts going, oh, this is awesome. I'm so scared. I'm scared shitless. But if I'm just myself, then it just works out wonderful.
Exactly. And that's the irony that you pointed out in confidence is like actual confidence is not feeling confident all the time. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I'm terrified, but I'm going to let it thrill me. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go into the grocery store. Let's be terrified. Oh, that's so good.
What is confidence? So I hop on a roller coaster and I'm confident that I'm going to get off the roller coaster, right? Why am I confident? I'm not confident in myself. I'm confident in the roller coaster because what? Because I believe. I believe that it's going to go around and I believe that it's not going to get flung off. Why do I believe? Well, I believe because I have faith in it, because I've seen it happen over and over and over again with people getting off of this roller coaster. I've been in line for like 3 hours. I have faith.
This must be Disney World you're talking about.
I've still not been to Disney World down here yet.
Really?
I've only been here a week, though. I'm going very soon.
Okay. I've never been.
Oh, my goodness. Trip.
Yes. Hey, trip. Let's go. We can get all the Minnie Mouse things.
Yes, and I'll let you know when I get my moon pod.
Yes, perfect. Hurry up and get it before next week so I can come down and go to Disney World. You know, okay, we like totally derailed there for a moment. I have no idea what we were talking about, but there is one more question that I really wanted to ask you.
Shoot, go ahead.
If you had to, it's kind of a two-parter. So if you had to boil down your old view of yourself into like, try to do it in one sentence, what would it be?
Scared as hell.
Is that what you see now, or is that what you believed at the time?
I was scared as hell all the time, and I felt that. I knew that. That's why I took Xanax. That's why I took so much of that stuff. I was so scared. That's why I smoked weed constantly, because weed to me was an identity. Literally just smoking all the time. And cigarettes were that way too. Mm-hmm. I would smoke cigarettes because I'm a smoker, right? They were an identity. And
kind of a community too.
Yes. And a way of, yeah, a way of kind of masking the identity that I am now, you know, and that I could have evolved into. But yeah, it was scared as hell. I was always just so scared of everything that I did. Even in school, like I was just always so petrified that they would ask me to go up and write on the whiteboard. So petrified. If I had a question about a math problem, I was so horrified to ask that question because of what people would think, you know. And that I talk about that in my book as stemming from my fear of intimacy.
Yeah, which makes sense, because if your go-to is not being intimate with yourself, with running from yourself, then great. If you have to go up in front of a classroom and all of them are making fun of you and you're also already beating yourself up, well, then this is an entire shitstorm of just terrible unkindness to yourself. You're beating yourself up and so is everyone else. Great. What could be more terrifying? All right. And then second part of that question, what's true of you now?
I believe. I believe. And that's why I have a little book right over here. And it's sitting right beside two pictures of my sons. And it says, believe. And inside of it, there's a whole bunch of quotes that are very true. On the back, Ralph Hodgkins says, some things have to be believed to be seen. So that means sometimes we even have to fake it till we make it. Like, we just do it and action will therefore lead to, you know, what we want to feel, what we want to manifest in our life, right? Do it. Like, there's so many, that's a whole nother podcast. Podcast number two could be talking about, you know, belief and the difference between belief and faith and trust. Those are three different words that all kind of build on each other, kind of like identity, intimacy, and faith too, you know?
For sure. But yeah, that belief has to come before. What was it again? Belief has to come before
faith.
Before faith, yeah.
Faith is built. Belief comes. Belief comes. I believe that my mail is going to arrive today. But and then ultimately it continues because I have faith. Mm-hmm. Because I see it happen all the time. Mm.
So faith is more, hey, I have this evidence. Belief is, I have no evidence yet, but I believe it.
Faith is kind of built in. So belief is more of a feeling that it's going mm-hmm. to happen, where faith okay. is like, faith is like the shame, and guilt is like the belief. Mm. Does that make sense? So when we were talking about guilt,
yeah, it's like a feeling. Oops, sorry, you cut out there. Say that again.
Yeah, belief is kind of a feeling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, belief is more faith, a feeling, and then faith is a feeling. Thought. It's a yeah. thought. That's mm-hmm. how you would describe it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think faith is an identity. Faith is like, this is, I have faith. I am faith. Mm. I walk in faith. You know, okay. because I believe.
Mm. Oh my God, same we really thing, could turn that into a whole
podcast. Same thing with guilty. Like, I feel guilty, therefore I am, and I walk around guilty. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I have faith, therefore I walk around in belief. Mm. Because I believe that it will happen.
Yeah. I love that. I want to stew on that a little bit more. Wow, Mark, we have gone through so many good points here. And, you know, everyone who's listening right now, you have to go pick up a copy of My Suicide Race. So I'll put the links in the description of here so they don't have to search for it everywhere. Do you still have signed copies available?
I have them coming from Amazon today.
Perfect. So I'll put both of those in there and any other links that you want. But what is your departing wisdom for everyone today? What?
Just believe that you can do this next minute. Mm. Just believe.
Yeah.
Just believe that the next task in front of you is going to be good, that you can do it, that you can be good throughout it.
Sounds
just
so
believe,
simple.
Just believe that the world needs you to be you. And then wait until those beautiful gifts start coming, because those beautiful gifts that start coming when we are who we are, they're beyond your greatest belief. They're beyond your greatest dreams. Mm-hmm. They're things that you wouldn't have ever thought of that start coming true when you believe who you are and you believe that it's good. Mm.
I love it. It sounds so simple when you say it that way, and yet it takes so much courage to just say, you know what? I can do the next 60 seconds.
Yeah, that's why it does sound so simple. But then when we get out there into the world, then time is a funky thing. So we have to break it down. Just do the next minute. Like, I've got to drive to Fort Lauderdale. That's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to drive there. See what happens next. I'm not going to worry about the next thing. I believe that I'm going to make it to Fort Lauderdale.
I was practicing that on a run actually just the other day, and I was thinking of you. I was like, first of all, I freaking hate running. And second, when was that? 2 days ago or something I did this. And I was like, oh yeah, well, Mark runs and we're going to talk in 2 days, and I can share with him about how I kept running and just focused on the next step, even though my mind wanted to go, when is the end of it? The sad thing, it was only a mile. It was at the end of a workout. It was only 1 mile. It was pathetic.
You know, the good thing about running is you keep adding on those types of things, and then all of a sudden you end up so far that you have to keep running back. Mm. And so yeah, that's another great metaphor. Like, keep on believing, but be aware that it's going to lead you to a place, and you're going to be that far away from which you started, which ultimately is a really good thing, most likely.
Most likely.
Unless you're believing the opposite and you're going backwards. But yeah.
All right. Well, my friend, thank you so much for coming and sharing your wisdom with us today. This has been fantastic. And y'all, I'll see you on the next episode.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't keep it to yourself. Share it with a friend so they too can become more confident. You can also help more people find the show by leaving a 5-star review wherever you listen. And if you want to become a more confident queer with support from yours truly, head to coachalexray.com or use the link down in the show notes. I'm looking forward to working with you.